The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So it seems appropriate to say something today that's related to the anniversary of, today's the 10th year anniversary of 9/11. And I remember very well, as I'm sure many of you did, all of you, what it was like that day and that week for yourself and for your friends or community or places of work. I remember very well seeing it unfold on television, sitting, I happened to accompany my sister for her early morning dialysis at a dialysis center, and it was a big room, and all these people in various states of illness getting their dialysis, each of them with a television monitor, and each of them at a different channel. And sitting there in this room of people who were suffering, watching, you know, my eyes going back and forth across the room to different televisions, images of what was going on. The contrast of the, what was happening in the room and what was happening or the in television was quite poignant. So in thinking about it, I think one of the really important aspects of human life that sometimes maybe is overlooked is that we have choices, and that our choices are consequential, and that to and in all circumstances we find ourselves, there's always choice, and our freedom is found in our choice, the choices we make, the ability to have choice. Some people have less freedom to make choice than others, but even in situations where our external freedom is taken away, there is still our choice of how we respond with our hearts and our minds in any circumstance at all. And it's sometimes said that our primary possession that we have is our capacity to choose. Do we choose, and what do we choose? What do we think is important? Even when things are quite challenging, and it's seemingly that that life is rolling over us, and seem like we just kind of abdicate or forget that our choice we have. But we have choice, and how do we strengthen that capacity to choose? How do we choose in ways that are wise for our world? So there's a beautiful story that Jack Kornfield tells. It seems that he was there. There was a monk, a Cambodian monk, that he knew when he was a monk in Thailand named Mahagosananda. And he says that when he was, they were kind of monks together in Ajahn Chah's monastery. Mahagosananda was, you know, kind of scholarly monk, kind of quiet, you know, did some meditation and didn't really stand out as being, you know, one of the outstanding meditation monks or somehow. But he's certainly a very, very nice man. But because he was in Thailand practicing, he was one of the very few Cambodian monks who survived the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia. And he became kind of one of the leading spokespeople for leading leaders of the Cambodian Buddhism. And then in the tragedies and the challenges of the Pol Pot era, his inner spiritual maturity showed itself in a way that it hadn't when he was maybe a quiet practitioner. Buddhism has a long history of quiet, unnoticed practitioners who people don't really appreciate them until something happens, and then, wow, look at that. So there were refugee camps for the Cambodians, and some of them had hundreds of thousands of people in them. And some of them were under the control of the Khmer Rouge. And he went back to one of them under the threat of death. There was a death threat that if he came back and did something, but he came back and he built a Buddhist temple, kind of a temporary Buddhist temple for the Khmers. And when it was finally finished, they had a opening ceremony event, and 20,000 of the refugees came and gathered around this place. It's a large gathering. And so, as Jack tells a story, to hear the ancient chants of Buddhism, you know, it's their religion, it has a deep meaning for them, some of them, and so to be able to hear the chants and to chant the chants was, you know, very important. And so then he started chanting, and he chanted one verse, of the Dharma, of the Buddha's teachings. And the verse that he chanted over and over again was, hatred is never overcome by hatred. Hatred is overcome by love. This is the eternal truth, or the eternal law. And as he chanted this over and over again, the people, I don't know, some of them at least, started crying. So how do we meet? What choice, when there's a choice between hate and love, which choice do we make? And I think a lot of that has to do with the value we put in each one, what we kind of maybe explicitly or implicitly, consciously or unconsciously, believe the consequences are going to be from acting on one over the other. And one of the things I think is pretty obvious to see when we act on hate is that we tend to create separation. And when we act on love, we tend to create connection between people. So the idea that hate creates separation and love creates connection. There is a social psychologist by the name of Thomas Pettigrew who for 30, 40 years studied prejudice and hostility between people. Not only did he research himself on the topic, but he surveyed, all the literature, that the research literature that's been going on this topic. And he points out, how remarkable it is, how quickly people will divide up and separate out. And sometimes people who have mostly, from far away, look like they mostly have so much in common, will distinguish themselves based on very small differences that seemingly seem so important to them. One of the things that the primary thing that his research and surveying pointed out, the primary thing that reduces hostility and prejudice between people is if they have close personal contact with the other. If they're just casual contact or no contact at all, it's very easy to maintain stereotypic views of the other, them. And it's very easy to kind of have very strong us versus them, me versus you kind of dichotomy that's quite strong. And sometimes we've seen how societies and people have used this kind of way of separating people and demonizing sometimes the other. And American society, of course, has a long history of doing this. And, wave after wave of immigrants have come to the United States, and seemingly each immigrant group that comes has to struggle with being ostracized and pushed away and prejudice pushed off. And it was the Irish or the Catholics or the Italians. And eventually they get more or less integrated, and then the next wave comes and they have to do the same thing. And so things haven't changed so much in that sense. We have new immigrants coming to this country. Now, lately, it's sometimes been the Muslims that come, or people coming, Hispanics, and they have some. They're kind of continuing with the American experience of being kind of left out or being the other, and hopefully that'll change, and the melting pot will work, and everybody gets invited in, and so we become us rather than we versus you, us versus them. And I think that part of the choice we can make is to appreciate the we, that we're all in it together. And, in terms of the 9/11, I'm struck by how in the New York part of the 9/11, the most common reference point, words to describe the location where the two planes crashed, is the Twin Towers or Ground Zero. Ground Zero is maybe, has a very powerful association with nuclear explosions. And so I don't know if that was the best choice of words. But, the Twin Towers are very descriptive. But the original name of those buildings were the World Trade Center. And I think, the idea that it's the world trade. Trade is where that connects people in the world. Trade is an exchange between, people. And it belonged to the world Trade Center. And it didn't just happen to the United States. It's happened to, there were people from Japan and Malaysia and India and Australia and Ireland and England and France and Spain and people from all over the world who worked in these buildings who got killed. Of every possible religion. It didn't just happen to Christian or Jews, but there are Muslims in there and Buddhists. And the idea that it was us, that happened to all of us, the world, it happened to the world. And it's, even now the world is commemorating. It isn't just the United States that's commemorating it, but there are ceremonies around the world for this event. And I think the idea that it's us, rather than the big we, all of us, as opposed to us versus them, is one of the most beautiful and important choices that we can make. That somehow we can find a way to feel and get to know and take in the value of all people, of everywhere, and not to allow hate, not to allow violence, and most important, not to allow our own pain to increase separation. I think one of the important tasks, I believe, of any human being is to learn how to wisely hold their own pain. And then, in knowing how to be with their own pain, to know how to choose the best possible choice out of experiencing one's own pain. And it's remarkable how much pain there is in this world of ours. You don't have to scratch the surface of many individuals or many families to experience that there's a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties and tragedies and suffering that goes on. But how do we hold it? How do we do to it? Do we respond with anger? Do we respond by closing down and running away? Or is there a way of responding with love, moving towards and stepping forward? I've found that, certainly I'm capable still of having grudges with people, conflict with people. But what I have learned is that whenever I have a grudge with someone or some conflict with someone, it's really important for me to go find them and be in the room and talk to them directly. Because my little mind has an ability to start making up stories and that are in the abstract that I would never do if I really see the person and know the person. A person stops becoming a caricature, in a sense, or an abstraction, and becomes real when I'm in contact. And so the few times in the last years where I've been in some kind of major conflict with people, I made a point to go find them and say, can I meet with you? Can we talk? Can we have lunch together? So that there could be some other way of meeting than just the meeting, the abstract idea. And usually conflict has to do with only a narrow aspect of anybody's life. And so to meet, there's a chance to see the wider range of who a person is. And so our common humanity. So my hope is that something like 9/11 changes all of us for the better, that it's a dramatic impact on the human psyche. It was a kind of powerfully symbolic event that happened. There are more than 3,000 people who die every year on United States roads. But we don't gonna have a national commemoration for all the people who died in accidents, car accidents. But somehow it was symbolic, that right at the heart of New York City, right at the Pentagon, that this kind of attack that, And so it kind of touches everyone in a way that powerful symbolic symbols can have. And so how do we take that in such a way that we choose the best response? What are the resources? What are the understandings? What do we have that brings out the best of us in times when we're challenged? And I think that's a choice each of us has to make, because if we don't get involved with the choices and think about it, then maybe it's too easy sometimes for the gut responses to take over, the fear to respond or the anger to respond. It's reasonable to be afraid and to feel tremendous grief and pain and to feel anger and these things. But is that the best place to choose from? Are there other places we can tap into in ourselves that we can choose from? And is there compassion? Is there a reaching out for the other and to be inclusive rather than exclusive? I grew up, part of my growing up was in Europe. And I grew up kind of in the wake of World War II. I wasn't born during World War II, but 10 years later. But my parents' generation, went through it. And the stories, the presence of World War II was still very much present for me growing up when I was there. And the people that I've met who survived the concentration camps. I mean, one couple that I knew were there as children and then were orphaned in the camps. And they said that what made the huge difference after the war was the people who were kind to them. The people who took them in and were generous and supportive of them, that turned them around, that their bitterness, their cynicism, their pain somehow melted in the people who didn't have to take them in as orphan children and took them in. That there were people who they would have thought would have helped them out who didn't. And there were people who they didn't expect who took them in. And that made all the difference in the world, the kindness and support that they got. And so for me, when 9/11 happened, I don't know if my reaction response was exactly wise or commendable or something, but given my kind of background growing up in Europe and living many parts of the world different times, I had already been, was quite aware of how much war and violence and suffering there exists in the world. And when the planes went into the buildings in New York City, one of my first thoughts was, I thought it was tragic, and it was horrible. But also, I had a feeling, this is what happens all the time in this world of ours. But to some degree, it's often been over there, someplace else. And here, it's here also. And so now it's easier, I was hoping, for it to be the big we. It's all of us. It's not just over there. It's not them and us, but we. And what is it like to, so can we choose, or do we want to choose, to step beyond our national, ethnic, group identities, to somehow move on beyond, to open up to this wider humanity of all of us, and to be supportive of all of us, to be helpful and make a difference in the world. The last thing I'll say is that 10 years ago, in trying to understand 9/11 and the impact it had, because it felt to me that the stronger that something like that impacts the heart, the stronger we're kind of stunned or taken back or moved deeply by something like this, the more I think it's important to be changed by the event. To somehow change in the sense of new choices about what's important. Then not to forget it and just go on as if nothing ever happened. But to see, how can I be changed for the better for this? Not to remember, now the big idea is we won't remember, right? That's the newspaper headline said, we will never forget. We will always remember. But what are we going to remember? What are we remembering when we remember 9/11? I hope that what we remember is certainly the people who died and the suffering of their families and caring for them, but also that we remember the best in our human hearts, that we remember that we are capable of compassion and generosity and care, and that it's something that we can choose to do, and that 9/11 proves to have been the beginning of a new era for this world of ours. And I am so eager and ready for someone to declare that we've now entered the era of compassion. Age of compassion. I think we're overdue. And that So to be changed by these events, I was changed by it, and I made choices that changed the direction of my life because of 9/11 and the kind of things that I do. And you know, those choices still affect me, how I go about my life. So how have you been changed? Or how have you been changed by it? Or say it differently, how would you like to be changed by 9/11? Were there ways that you, things that you choose to do, where the best of you came forward and said, this is how I want to be changed? Or looking back at it now, how is it that you want to be changed by such a big event, such an important event? And I think that's kind of, one of the great important questions, is not someone else should do something. Someone else should take care of this problem. This is what they should do, and this is who's to blame. But what is your choice? That's the great question for you. What's your choice? How do you want to be changed in such an event? How do you want to become a stronger person by acting on the best that's in your heart? That, to me, would be the beautiful way, important way of remembering this. And perhaps we'll look back in 10, 20, 30 years, and we'd see that we began an age of compassion. So those are my thoughts. And we have a few minutes here. And I was wondering, if it's not too personal or something, if some of you would like to say something about your wish for how you would like to be changed, or the wish how you wanted to be changed, or how you were changed for the better by these events 10 years ago. Bill, over here.
As far as being changed for the better, I don't know. The anger is still there. The wanting to have an answer, retribution. And so I love your teachings, but it's, some point you say there's that gut reaction.
Right.
That someone has to pay or something has to be done. So I really find it hard to, have the kind of love and compassion you're talking about in a situation like this. Although when we look at the world as a whole with all the things that are going on, in Afghanistan, Africa, the suffering is taking place, and many places we don't even know about, it's sort of overwhelming. What do you do, and how do you do it?
Right.
So you maybe take a little pivot and do a little something. I send money to the Salvation Army on a regular basis. I have a lot of faith in them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the 9/11, how it I still feel the anger. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to resolve that.
Mm-hmm. So one of the, I think one of the beautiful choices a person can make is to come to terms with anger, to come to terms with pain, to be willing to look at it deeply and do the inner work that can resolve, release, free the anger. Because anger is painful for everyone, self and others. And so I think it's beautiful to be interested in that. Whether it can be done, whether you have the capacity to do it, is secondary to how beautiful it is to want to do it. And it takes some wisdom, it takes some trust that or confidence that in letting go of anger or dissolving the anger or something, that you'll still be safe. Some trust that there are other alternative ways of creating safety or resolving issues in our life. From the perspective of anger, sometimes punishment, revenge, is the kind of seems the obvious thing to do. But are there other options, other possibilities? And so I don't have an answer for you except the beauty, the importance of being willing to look at this and work through it. And I think too many people are willing to be tolerant of their anger. and not look at it deeply, go along with it. And it's quite remarkable that there are people who have been able to really plummet to the depth of their anger, their hate, and move it and change it in a deep way. There was a beautiful Jacques Verdun, maybe he said that here when he's come and taught. He started the Insight Prison Project at San Quentin. I was talking with him recently, and he told me the story of how his project came up with this beautiful slogan that now they use a lot. And the story was they were teaching mindfulness and violence prevention to a group of inmates. And this really big, strong, burly, tough former gang leader who was kind of like the gang leader in the prison, you know, kind of head guy, whatever. And at some point going through this program, said, "Oh, now I get it. Hurt people hurt." And then one of his, like, fellow former gang members said, "Yes, yeah, and healed people heal." So that's now the slogan. Hurt people hurt, healed people healed. So to do the work that it takes to heal, I think is one of the beautiful, beautiful things to do. And when we've had the capacity to heal, when we're healed, then we have the capacity to heal.
One of the troubling things I found growing up was hearing about the ugly American. And I wondered what that was based on. And I didn't do enormous traveling, but I did eventually travel. And realized that just living here in the United States, I'm probably in the top couple of percent of the people in the world economically, just being here. I don't have to be successful or unsuccessful, just being here. And I was told that it's the arrogance that we kind of behaved with as we went through the world. And as a nation, some of the decisions we made. And it seemed to me that so many of the world, so many countries, almost all the countries of the world have had acts of war visited upon them, and we never had visit upon us. We've done our own to ourselves. And it seemed to me, in a sense, that we joined the world on this dark day.
Yeah, something like that. I'm always kind of reluctant to go along with any kind of stereotypic views that people are special, different. So, to break that down, as you said, and see we're all in it together, I think that's much more useful. So even the idea of the ugly American, it's a sad kind of expression. And or the Americans are kind of arrogantly kind of forcing their way onto the world. I mean, what society hasn't been doing that to someone? It's just that we've been able to do it to a greater degree, but it's not any different than what happens so much elsewhere anyway. But there's also a lot of beauty, beautiful Americans. There's a lot of wonderful values in this country. And the degree to which there's volunteerism in this country is phenomenal. I don't know if you realize that this, how unusual it is in the world. Just a phenomenal amount, and the phenomenal amount of support that goes to nonprofits in this country is much greater than almost anywhere else. And I was kind of really moved, so deeply moved, when my son started doing Little League. And what moved me was all these men and women, grown-ups, who are volunteering all their time to make Little League work for these kids. You know, it's a beautiful thing, Little League. And there's a lot of things like that. And acts of generosity. So I think we're all in it together. So Nicole and Alts. Nicole there was asking in the outer hall if you can pass the mic to her.
I was really struck after 9/11. I don't know how many people know who Noam Chomsky is, who did the film Manufacturing Consent, which was a real eye-opener for me. But he was almost lynched when he said that blowing up the Trade Center was one of the best things that could have happened for America because of our just somnambulant attitude towards Palestine and the Muslim world, et cetera. He said this was really such a wake-up call that no one could ignore it.
So I saw some hands in here. Yeah.
The year before 9/11, I was singing with a chorus that was called the World Harmony Chorus. And we had planned a trip to Cuba to go sing an international festival of choruses. And 9/11 happened a month or so before our trip. And we hadn't yet gotten our approval for an educational trip to Cuba. Because of the embargo, travel there was limited. We went under the hospice of another group and went to, a month after 9/11, we flew there to sing. And I was surprised and it was very heartwarming to receive the sorrow and the compassion from a lot of the Cuban choruses, as well as the people we met in the street.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's thank you. It is amazing to have the human contact. And this is why, you know, to have a sense of what's possible when there's human contact and what softens in the heart is really, that's why there's the cultural exchanges is so important. So there's one thing that occurs to me, there was someone I know who's father was, I think he was a soldier in World War II who ended up in caught by the Germans and then in concentration camps or something, and then was released at the end of the war. And he was held in Eastern Germany. And so when the Berlin Wall fell down, and he was traumatized by this experience, and he would wake up in nightmares in the 1950s and 60s and always stayed with him, just how difficult that time was. But when the Berlin Wall came down, he went to East Germany to find his captors. And after that, he no longer was afraid, no longer had his bitterness, his pain, that he met and they talked and they somehow had a heart connection in a way that... and that's quite, it's quite something to make that effort to reach out and connect. Yes, please.
So I grew up 20 miles outside New York City. My mom's here with me today, so she grew up as well. And my father, her husband, commuted through the World Trade Center every day for 25 years or so. I was living in New York at the time of 9/11, and luckily no one in our family was harmed. My dad got off the island. It was quite a story, of course, and that day was hard because we couldn't reach him for a while. But being in New York the weeks after 9/11, the image that's in my mind is walking through the subway tunnels, and every wall was covered with the drawings of schoolchildren, many of whom had lost a parent in 9/11. Sorry, it's still really hard to think about all those kids. And I think the hardest thing is not being able to get in a room, and have this close contact with the people who we feel are our aggressors.
Mm.
That there is a sense of "quote unquote" negotiating with terrorists, and searching so hard within yourself to find compassion, and not being able to expect any in return. And I think if there's one change I could ask for in myself, it would be that
To meet with people and.
Just have compassion, but expect none in return.
Yeah, I think that's wise. That's a really wise choice. Thank you very much. So I think we should stop. So one of the greatest things, there's many great things we can choose to do in this life. I think healed people heal. And so to be able to look at or be present for our discomfort, our pain, our suffering, and learn how to do it in a wise way, in a way that supports us and empowers us and allows what's beautiful in us to come forth, is one of the great choices a person can make. And my hope is that a place like IMC, a practice like mindfulness or meditation, becomes a great support that helps us take what's difficult in our lives, the challenges of life, the anger, the hurt, the fear, the tremendous discomfort we can feel, and somehow help us hold it or be with it or heal it so that the best of the human heart can come forth into the world. Because there's so much beauty in every heart. And given a chance to emphasize and support the beauty, I think that we become, peacemakers for this world of ours. And my hope is that each and every one of us becomes a peacemaker that makes a difference, improving the world we live in. May we all do it together. Thank you.